Christmas time is upon us again. I've heard several people just here recently remark on how quickly this year has gone, and I can't argue with that. It seems to have flown by. Our planet has made another revolution around the sun, and we've arrived at that time when we celebrate the birth of Jesus. Now, I know that that means different things to different people. For preachers, it means coming up with something new and fresh on the very familiar story of the birth of Jesus. And trust me, when you've been at a church for 24 years, that gets a little challenging. So I thought back to what we've been doing up to this point this year. Starting in January, we adopted a theme, sharpening our spiritual skills. And through the months, we've looked at various, skill sets, such as prayer, sharing our faith, meeting others' needs, lots of things, giving thanks. And the thought occurred to me, could we extend that into the Christmas season? And I thought of sharpening the skills for Christmas. Not skills of Christmas, what in the world is that? I'll be honest, most of the skills I came up with, I don't have. Like wrapping presents nicely. Decorating the tree. Yeah, you can tell who hung the angel on top. By the way, thank you to those who came and helped decorate. Hanging lights around the house. Unless they're high enough for me to reach them on the ground, they're not going up. Now, all these are worthwhile skills to possess. That's not what I'm going to be talking about, though. I want to look at some skills that, quite frankly, I think we've lost. Linda touched on one of them, and we'll be coming back to that in another message later this month, the skill of wonder, the idea of being in awe of God. We're going to look at the skill of worship, worshiping Christ as we celebrate his birth. We're going to look at the skill of witnessing, telling others the good news. I mean, we're very quick to tell people other good news, but what about the good news? What Christmas is really all about? And this morning, I want to begin this with the skill of welcome. Christmas is a time when family and friends get together, often in homes. I have many fond memories growing up. My family packing into the car early Christmas morning and heading off the 80 or so miles southeast to my grandparents' house in West Virginia. The house wasn't much to look at. It had tar paper on the front that looked like bricks, but it really wasn't. Small house, but we packed 60 people in there. All the uncles and the aunts and the cousins and the in-laws and the outlaws and, you know, just the whole nine yards. They were all there. And we loved it. In fact, even though we had lived in Ohio for many, many years, whenever we talked about going to West Virginia, whether it was Christmas or any other time, we talked about going home because that's where our hearts were. So coming home for Christmas, I got to admit, I love the song, the old classic Christmas song, "There's No Place Like Home for the Holidays." That just resonates in me because I think about all those times of going home for Christmas. And there was my grandmother. She did all of the cooking for all 60 people, and there was a whole lot left over too. She had two stoves. I'd never seen a house with two stoves. I mean, this house didn't have two bathrooms, but it had two stoves. And she had them all going. And it was the greatest meal we probably ate all year. But something has happened in our culture. We're not as welcoming as we used to be. We don't have people in our homes on a regular basis. We're more likely to meet at restaurants or rented halls for family gatherings. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I think we've lost this sense of welcoming into our homes. And I think I know the culprit. Used to be the letters BC stood for before Christ. And if something in history happened before the birth of Jesus, we would say it the number of years BC, before Christ. Well, not too long ago, the secularists decided we can't have that. And so they changed it to BCE, before the common era. Now, funny, they still have zero as the birth of Christ. They just don't want to use his name. BC has a different meaning now. Before COVID. You hear a lot of people talk about the way things were before COVID. And for a lot of things, or a lot of places, institutions, churches, we still haven't gotten back to that. There were things like social distancing and not having people over because we were afraid of what they might give us. I think we've lost something in our skill of worship, and I think it's a skill we can sharpen during this holiday season. The first and perhaps most obvious skill to sharpen in this regard is to welcome in our homes. We need to accept one another. We need to welcome each other even as He has welcomed us. In Mark chapter 9, verse 37, Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." A few verses later, in verse 41, he says, "I tell you the truth, anyone who gives you a cup of cold water in my name because you belong to Christ will certainly not lose his reward." A word that is often used in the Bible for this skill is the word hospitality. Now, in our culture, the hospitality industry is usually reserved for hotels and restaurants, people that work in such industries. But in Bible times, it meant opening up your home. Paul wrote in Romans 12, 13, "Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality." Peter similarly commends in 1 Peter 4, 9, "Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling." Ooh, now you're stepping on toes. You can expand that to read, "Gladly open up your homes and welcome each other as guests, especially those who are in need of a meal or room overnight, and don't complain about the inconvenience." Biblical hospitality is an authentic welcoming and serving, especially to those who have nothing to give in return. And Jesus said in Matthew 25, 40, "What we do for the least of his brethren, we're doing it to him." What he had said in Mark, "When you even offer a cup of cold water to somebody in need, it'll be rewarded, because you're doing it to him." I found it interesting that the Greek term translated hospitality in the New Testament is philoxenos. No, you don't need to know that for a test. But you may recognize the two words that makes up that compound word. The word philo comes from philos, or philia, which means brotherly love. Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. May not live up to it, but you know, that's what it says, what the name means anyway. Phileo, love, the love between brothers. Now the second half of that word, xenos, probably 15, 20 years ago, nobody would have known what that word was, but now it's become part of our vocabulary, not as the suffix, but as a prefix. I imagine every one of you have heard the word xenophobia at some point, which is the fear or the hatred of strangers. And xenos is translated stranger or foreigner. This idea of philoxenos is just the opposite of xenophobia. This is welcoming in strangers, people we don't know, but are in need, opening our homes to them. You know, hospitality is a very highly honored virtue in Middle Eastern culture, even to this day. And you see this in the Bible a lot. Genesis 18. First book, wrong testament. Genesis 18. Abraham has three guests show up at his tent, and immediately he goes to work. He is preparing a place for them. Sarah is making dinner for them. That's what you do. And if it's the only thing you have in your possession, you give it to a stranger in need. And you see that many times in the Old Testament. Turns out that those visitors that Abraham welcomed into his home were supernatural. They were angels. And that may have been what prompted the author of Hebrews to write in Hebrews 13:2, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it." But then later in that same chapter, verse 16 says, "And do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." You see, hospitality is not limited to only welcoming someone into your house. Verse 16 speaks of doing good, of sharing with others. And that's also a part of hospitality. Doing good can cover a lot of activities: sharing food with the needy, transporting people to or from church or other places they need to go, giving money, maybe just being a helpful neighbor, shoveling a walk or a driveway, or just being kind. It doesn't have to be a large gift either. Jesus said even the smallest act catches his attention. In the little book of 3 John, comes at the end of the New Testament, the Apostle John commends a man named Gaius for being hospitable. In verse 6, "They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth." Gaius was continually engaged in serving the needs of these individuals who were coming in ministry, sharing the word from place to place. The Greek text actually has in there, "and this to strangers." These weren't people that Gaius knew personally, and yet he opened his home to them. He fed them. He gave them a place to stay. Probably gave them some money as they were leaving to help them on their way. He not only opened his home, but he opened his heart. He opened his hand, giving financial help. Now today, hospitality may be demonstrated by, you know, just having over others for a meal to encourage them. When was the last time that you had somebody over for dinner, or maybe just, you know, a cup of coffee and maybe a dessert? Just to spend some time, get to know them. I mean, how hard is it to get to know people in the church family when the only place you see them is 5 minutes before church and 5 minutes after? It's hard to really get to know folks. But back in the day, we'd open our homes. I remember growing up, my parents would often have missionaries stay with us, visiting preachers that were coming through. They stayed in our homes. They ate dinner with us. We got to know them as people, not just that person behind the pulpit. I remember one weekend we had a couple. They had been ministering in the African nation of Mali for over 40 years. And while they were at our home, they got word that their retirement package had gone through and they had completed their ministry. And we got to share that moment with them. It was just amazing to grow up in that kind of a setting. We don't do that anymore. We don't open our homes. And that's a skill that I think we should sharpen. Another way to practice this skill is to welcome others in our hours. What do you mean by that? Let me illustrate from an example in the life of Jesus. It's recorded in Luke chapter 8. In Luke chapter 8, beginning in verse 40. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, there was a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, and no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately the bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." Picture the scene. Jesus is coming into town and there's a large crowd there awaiting him. And here comes Jairus. He's a ruler in the synagogue, a very important man. And he comes and he pleads with Jesus, "Come to my house. I have a 12-year-old daughter. She's near death. I know that you could heal her. Please hurry and come." And so Jesus begins to go toward his house, and the crowd is going with him. And as they're moving toward the house, Jesus suddenly stops and says, "Who touched me?" Peter's like, "Are you kidding me? Who hasn't touched you? This crowd is all around you. Of course people are touching you. What do you mean?" Jesus says, "No, somebody intentionally touched me because I felt the power go out from me." And then a woman comes hesitantly. She falls at the feet of Jesus. She says, "Yes, it was me. I've been had this issue of bleeding for 12 years. Nobody could cure me. I touched the hem of your garment and I've been healed." And Jesus says to her, "Go, your faith has made you well." There's another way of translating that Greek phrase, "Go, your faith has saved you." And I think that's more accurate. Now that's a great story, right? Unless you're Jairus. He's off to the side going like this, saying, "Come on, Jesus. My daughter's dying. You can come back to her later. I need you now." And if you read on in the chapter, before they get to Jairus' house, a servant comes out and says, "It's too late. She's dead." Jairus is thinking, if he hadn't stopped, if he hadn't talked to that woman, he could have healed my girl. Jesus gave that woman the gift of time. Now, spoiler alert, Jesus did go and bring Jairus' daughter back from the dead, so, you know, in case you're wondering. But here is Jesus in the midst of an urgent situation. I mean, it doesn't get much more urgent than life and death, right? And he stops. He takes time. He acknowledges a woman who knew that she had been healed, but I'm not so sure she realized that she had been saved. And Jesus reassured her, "Your faith has saved you. Your faith has literally made you whole, body, soul, and spirit." What a blessing. And Jesus took time for her. That's giving the gift. That's welcoming someone into our hours, into our busy schedule. And that's a costly gift to give, because once you spend time, you don't get it back. You can spend money and make more to replace it, but you don't get time back. When you give somebody that gift, it is very important and worthwhile to them. Scripture teaches us that, humanly speaking, time is nothing less than a gift of God. It's a precious package of life given to us by our Heavenly Father. Think of it on Christmas morning. It's gift wrap and it's got your name on it. It's the gift of time. We don't know how much time we have, but every moment of life is a gift from God, and He wants us to invest it wisely. That's why we make a huge statement to others when we joyfully offer them the gift of our time. It's no insignificant gesture. Hospitality is the gift of welcome, even in our busy schedules. So I ask you, have you given anybody the gift of your time lately? When was the last time you hit the pause button on your overburdened schedules and just gave away an hour or two to someone in need? We need to welcome one another in our hours. And then finally, we can welcome in our hearts. Previously, I mentioned hospitality is opening our home to others, but it's also opening our hearts to them. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 7:2, "Make room for us in your hearts." He wasn't speaking here of their homes, but of your hearts. Make room for us in your heart. The late Keith Green sang, "Open your hearts to the ones who are desperate. Open your hearts. Open your hearts. They may never repay you, but their souls are worth it. New life you impart when you open your heart." Just as sunshine reveals the beauty of a stained glass window, hospitality allows the light of God's sun to shine as you open your heart to others. But I want to conclude this message from a different angle. I've been speaking of the skill of welcoming others into our homes, our hours, and our hearts. And that is an important skill. I think we should sharpen that. But I also want to consider welcoming Christ into those same three areas. Many years ago, there was a sermon preached by a man named Robert Boyd Munger. It was published in a little pamphlet called My Heart, Christ's Home. I remember my dad had this years and years ago. I'd just like to share a little portion of the beginning of that. He says, In his letter to the Ephesians, Paul writes these words, that God may grant you to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, and that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Another translation of that reads, that Christ may settle down and be at home in your hearts by faith. I like that. Without question, one of the most remarkable Christian doctrines is that Jesus Christ himself, through the Holy Spirit, will actually enter the heart, settle down and be at home. Christ will live in any human heart that welcomes him. He said to his disciples in John 14:23, if a man loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Now, in a previous chapter, Jesus was telling his disciples, I'm about to leave. They said, what are you talking about? You're going to leave, but you're going to make your home with us? What does that mean? It's interesting that Jesus uses that same concept of home that he used earlier in John 14:2. I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you might be also. So Jesus is going back to heaven. He's going to prepare an eternal home for us where he will welcome us in. But that's not what he was talking about earlier. He wants to come into our hearts and make that his home. I will never forget the evening I invited him into my heart. What an entrance he made. It was not a spectacular emotional thing, but very real, occurring in the very center of my soul. He came into the darkness of my heart and turned on the light. He built a fire in the cold hearth and banished the chill. He started music where there had been stillness and harmony where there had been discord. He filled the emptiness with his own loving fellowship. I have never regretted opening the door to Christ. And this, of course, is the first step in making the heart Christ's home. He has said in Revelation 3:20, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me. If you want to know the reality of the personal presence of Jesus Christ at the innermost part of your being, simply open wide the door and ask him to come in and be your Savior and Lord. As Christ entered my heart in the joy of that newfound relationship, I said to him, Lord, I want this heart of mine to be yours. I want you to settle down here and be fully at home. I want you to use it as your own. Let me show you around and point out some of the features of the home that you may be more comfortable. I want to enjoy our time together. He was glad to come and seemed delighted to be given a place in my ordinary little heart. Now, the rest of the booklet details how he goes from one room of his heart to the next, corresponding to a house. You know, he shows him the kitchen. What is it that he feeds his mind and his soul? He goes to the entertainment room. What does he watch? What kind of entertainment does he have? You know, there's the living room, the work room, even the hall closet. And he admits there are some of those doors he wanted to keep closed. Jesus, you really don't want to see what's in here, right? Like we all were when we were kids and we knew that our room wasn't as clean as it was supposed to be. I would just shut the door, right? But he knew that if Jesus was going to be at home in his heart, he had to open all the doors. He had to be welcomed everywhere. Christ wants to be at home in every room of our hearts. You know, there's one person in the Christmas story that I think always gets a bad rap. That's the innkeeper, right? In Luke 2:7, it says, Mary placed baby Jesus in a manger because there was no room in the inn. We don't know his name, but the innkeeper has appeared in countless Christmas pageants ever since, right? And he's always the one turning them away. Sorry, no room here. You can go in the barn. And people think, how could anybody not find room for the Son of God? How can anybody leave the Lord out in the cold? And people are still doing it to this day. Because Jesus is still out there knocking. And many doors are stayed shut. Many people will not welcome him in. There's a holiday medley that I've heard for years, and I love it to this day, that captures this thought. No room, only a manger of hay. No room, he is a stranger today. No room, here in his world, turned away. No room. Angels in heaven up yonder watch with amazement and wonder to see the Son of the Highest treated so. No room here in the hearts of mankind. No room, no cheery welcome to find. No room, surely the world is blind. No room. And then it transitions to another song. Have you any room for Jesus? He who bore your load of sin, as he knocks and asks admission, sinner, won't you let him in? Room for Jesus, King of glory, hasten now, his word obey. Swing your heart's door widely open, bid him enter while you may. This Christmas, let's sharpen the skill of welcome. Let's welcome each other into our homes, into our hours, into our hearts. But let's welcome Jesus into those same areas of our life.